And here we go. Good afternoon. I am Matt. This is the Anarchist Investor coming at you every Monday through Friday live at 12 Eastern. I got a good one for you today. It's Friday. We're going through options expiration in the casino, which always means that, you know, there's no manipulation going on at all whatsoever. just kidding. There's always manipulation. Anyway, on that note, the algorithm doesn't like me. I spit some facts from time to time. I don't pull punches, so I need your help. So definitely throw me a sub, a like, a follow, a share, throw in the comments, whatever you're looking at. I want to know what you're looking at investment-wise, what questions you have, comments, concerns. Tell me whether I'm doing a good job or not and whether or not you're liking what's coming out of my mouth. I had on the hold screen here waiting at the beginning of the live the silver chart. Silver is one of the only things that's performing pretty well today. There's a lot of stuff that's pulling back today. Small cap stocks and things like that are having an okay day, but silver is really having a decent time of it. Silver, and also sticking with the inflationary theme, copper as well. Copper's popping today and has seen a lot of strength, as I've continued to talk about recently. I was talking about softness in the market or weakness in the market. Pulling up the shorter term time frame chart for Bitcoin. Bitcoin has pulled back off the all-time highs. It went as low as about 65,600 in terms of the price versus Tether. Like I said, I use Tether more often than not as a base pair to look at. But if you look at the US dollar, it dropped down to about the same 65,600, give or take. It's bouncing a little bit right here, but obviously we're down big today, and most of the crypto market space is down in sympathy with it. Solana is actually bucking the trend and up 3%. And one of my other darlings that I like to look at, we're actually looking at the gold and silver backed cryptocurrencies. That gold's actually KAU is having an all right day. Interestingly enough, even though gold's underperforming silver, and the silver-backed cryptocurrency is just kind of flattish on the day. It was up more before, but that's just kind of the ebb and flow of things. All right, that's really what I'm looking at. I mean, I can also pull up the fixed income markets just to give those a look. Fairly quiet. I mean, like, you know, high-yield bonds are somewhat flattish. Yields on U.S. Treasuries are elevated a little bit, so there's still some selling on U.S. Treasuries. But what I did want to talk about today, and actually if I pull up the longer term time frame chart of, say, like the 2-year US Treasury, you would expect these rates to be going down if everyone believed that the Federal Reserve was going to cut rates. And I think what the narrative has been out of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell has actually been telling the truth and just no one's been listening to him. Okay. And I can't believe that phrase is coming out of my mouth. But I think the problem is that most people are making some really big assumptions about the things that are coming out of his mouth, and they're completely wrong. Okay. And here's why. And I'm going to explain my reasoning. So a couple days ago, earlier this week, the theme of the live cast was basically the bailout that happened in 2020. All right. And most people assume that the bailout happened as a result of the pandemic and the coming shutdowns and the supply chain disruption and everything like that. And that was the cover that they used. But truthfully, the cover was a perfect cover in the grand scheme of things. When you look at kind of like the average person viewing the investment world, obviously we're going to shut down and we're worried that people are going to die. And so we need to print money and send it out there so that people don't, you know, go bankrupt. And because a lot of people are going to lose their jobs and things like that. Well, it was good cover because, truthfully, back in 2018, the Federal Reserve realized that they weren't able to raise interest rates. They had absolutely no black powder left. They couldn't zhuzh the economy. There was no ability to do that because when you cut into negative interest rate territory, it actually starts to work against itself really quickly. And so whereas you would think that that would actually help the economy, it actually ends up harming it more than anything. And we could have a debate as to whether or not lower interest rates actually help the economy or hurt the economy. From an Austrian economics standpoint, interest rates should be allowed to move, you know, based off of actual price discovery as opposed to manipulation. But that being said, the Federal Reserve was backed into a corner. They had interest rates at 0%. In 2018, they tried to start raising interest rates, and it caused basically overnight bank lending rates to skyrocket. And there was all this counterparty risk because of how overly leveraged all the banks still were, even after all the quantitative easing, after all the bailouts in 2007, 2008, and 2009. After all of that, after all the band-aids that were put on the financial sector, they couldn't raise interest rates more than a half percentage point before everything started to fall apart. So they had to reverse course, drop interest rates, and they needed to kind of take a big look at some more facilities to help, you know, secure the financial sector. Well, that really caused a lot of them to wake up to the fact that they were not in the driver's seat anymore. There wasn't much that they could do to essentially manipulate and guide the economy from their standpoint. So they needed something to be able to increase interest rates. And actually, they needed to increase inflation, because the only reason why you would be able to increase interest rates is if inflation is high. If inflation is low, it would be political suicide. You'd increase interest rates and tank the economy, and everyone would, you know, you'd get fired from your job and ridiculed for the rest of all time, because, you know, if things are just okay and you decide to voluntarily basically destroy the economy, you'd be looked at as a terrorist for the rest of all time, right? So the Federal Reserve had no ammunition. They needed to get it back. So how do you do this? Well, you had a gigantic supply disruption that happened as a result of the pandemic. And again, I will border on conspiracy theorist here, but I'm not going to go full, you know, tinfoil hat on this one just yet. But what I can say is the pandemic gave them a golden opportunity to essentially reset the system, to reset their ability to have some kind of impact in markets. They needed a way to kind of refill their coffers with tools and ammunition to be able to then go out and affect the economy. And they needed cover to do it. They couldn't just tell you that that's what they were doing, because if they did, then the economy would have tanked anyway, because everyone would be like, holy crap, this is a house of cards that's like about to fall, right? So the Federal Reserve used the stimulus packages that came out of Washington, D.C., out of Congress, and they used the money printer in 2020 in order to pre-bail out all of the companies that they were worried about. And who got most of the stimulus money? Well, yeah, they rained checks down on average people, but those checks were a couple of $1,000s. When you do the math on the trillions of dollars that they printed and borrowed and spent, all of that money, like 97% of it, probably even more, went to corporations. It didn't go to individuals. And so why would all this money need to go to corporations? Well, the cover was, oh, we need to save jobs and all this other stuff. Well, they did the PPP loans and all this other stuff, and it was rampant with fraud. But even that wasn't the vast majority of the money that got spent and pushed out into the market. The vast majority of it was cash that ended up on the balance sheets of banks, ended up on the balance sheets of large industrial and retail and tech companies. It essentially created a buffer of cash in the system, whereas before there was actually a cash shortage and people were, companies were over leveraged. And if you raised interest rates, there was a bankruptcy risk there, right? There was a counterparty risk and they couldn't raise interest rates at all. So what they needed to do was create a cash cushion in the economy so that when they did eventually raise interest rates, that these companies wouldn't necessarily just completely collapse immediately. Okay, there would be some kind of runway where they could raise interest rates. There'd be some pain for some of these companies, but they would still be able to maintain a certain amount of their workforce, continue to do business, and then eventually be able to roll over their debt. But they needed the cash to be able to kind of bridge that gap. That money that was rained down was not for the pandemic. That money that was rained down was because we were on the verge of another great financial crisis, or a reemergence of the great financial crisis from 07, 08, and 09 that we never fixed. Okay. And so now moving forward, what's the story? Well, inflation remains high. Okay. And I even talked about the bullwhip effect yesterday in the producer price index numbers. Now, this is something that's probably going to get me excommunicated from a lot of libertarian and anarchist circles, but I'm sorry. Talking points aren't the truth, right? They can have nuggets of the truth in them, but they aren't the truth. The vast majority of the inflation that we've suffered over the last couple of years has not been caused by the money printer. Okay. Now, that being said, there's a big asterisk here. So don't hang me like St. Peter just yet. the vast majority of the inflation from the last couple of years has been from supply disruption. It hasn't been from the money printer. That money hasn't made it into the economy yet. I'm going to say this again. That money has not made it into the economy yet. It is sitting in cash hoards on corporations' balance sheets and very wealthy people that have decided to cash in and sit there making 4.5% on a 2-year treasury. Sorry, 4.7% on a 2-year treasury, essentially federally tax-protected return, right? That money has not created inflation yet. What we're experiencing is still the tailwind effect, or not the tailwind effect, the tail effects of the bullwhip, okay? We continue to move back and forth. The last PPI number that came out yesterday that I talked about, the vast majority of it is energy. Well, just like any other kind of economic reading and activity, nothing goes straight up, nothing goes straight down. If I pull up a chart of oil, okay, you're going to see the bullwhip in full effect. I got to hit share here. You're going to see this bullwhip in full effect. If I pull this chart out and look at this, okay, oil rips because of the reemergence of the economy after. But if you notice, it completely got destroyed. So look at the amplitude when lockdowns happen. The amplitude of this drop leading into 2020. Okay. There was actually a fall off starting. Okay. Again, great financial crisis was coming. All right. There's a fall off starting and then it just completely collapses at some point in time. There is a print on this chart. And I don't know if this was actually a filled order, but it's like deeply negative. Like someone literally paid to burn money to buy oil. Is it like an absolutely erroneous print? But that being said, I mean, oil dropped down from, you know, it was trading in the 60s and 70s. It dropped all the way down into the teens and single digits. All right. Then what happens? Then the bullwhip takes over. Now, all of a sudden, you know, things get shut down. Things are slow. Now we reopen. And now the bullwhip takes over and oil climbs all the way back up to $120 a barrel. Okay. Most people are like, well, that's the money printer. That's the money printer. Bullshit. It's not the money printer. When it happens in a year and a half time frame, okay, that's not the money printer. The velocity of money does not work that way. Okay. And not the way that they did it. So we go all the way back up to 120. That's the beginning of the bullwhip, right? Or maybe the second undulation. So now what happens? We go from 110, 120 all the way back down to like the low 60s. Okay. The bullwhip is taking effect and it's continuing to play out, but the amplitude is gradually going down. So now what do we have? We had another rise, a fall, and we're in a little bit of a rise again. The inflation from 2020 and the lockdowns and all of the supply disruption is beginning to abate, all right? The Federal Reserve wants to cut rates, but they don't want to actually cut rates. They see the writing on the wall. The inflation is almost all but gone as far as the supply chain disruption. But what they need to do is unleash some of the cash that's being stored, but they don't want to do it by actually cutting interest rates. Because if they did, now all of a sudden there's a fervor that will take over and we will get hyperinflation. I've made this analogy before. The Fed has essentially gotten us to the precipice. We're at the edge of the cliff. Okay. But the Fed's activities aren't what ends up typically pushing us over. Typically, there's some kind of exogenous thing that comes along that's unforeseen that ends up pushing us off the cliff. Okay. What we're seeing right now is we're in the danger zone. And the question is whether or not they can kind of just play out the string until we slowly back away from the edge of the cliff. I don't have any faith because I don't think we've ever seen the Federal Reserve or any central bank be able to, you know, strategically do anything like this. They're essentially making this up as they go too, because never in the history of central banking, okay, has there ever been a pre-bailout, all right? This actually gave them the impetus to do it, and they're trying this, but they don't know what the end result is going to be. I can tell you what it's going to be, granted, you know, within a margin of error. What they want to do right now is Jerome Powell is trying to get interest rates to drop, but he doesn't want to actually cut the interest rates yet. Because if he does, there's going to be just a deluge of this cash sitting on the sidelines that will cause hyperinflation. All right, let's go back to the 2-year yield again. if we go back to this two-year yield, the moment that everyone thought that the Federal Reserve was pausing and that they were going to cut, we saw a dramatic drop in interest rates on the two-year yield. Beginning in January of 2024, the two-year yield was almost at 4%. The Fed funds rate was over a percentage point higher than that. There was this anticipation, okay? The premise behind this is called the credible threat theory. So when a central bank is giving you a credible threat that they're going to do something, raise interest rates, drop interest rates, typically the market front runs it. It's the Federal Reserve trying to control expectations and the psychology of the market. Well, unfortunately, rates came down and now they've bumped back up again because it's becoming apparent to the market that you don't cut interest rates until you cut interest rates. I should make this a meme. You don't cut until you actually cut, right? And so with the Federal Reserve sitting where they're at, and we're seeing some of these remnant effects from the supply chain disruption still sitting in the marketplace, it's becoming very murky as far as if the Fed's going to cut and when they're going to cut. Okay. I don't think they want to, because like I said, there is just a tsunami of cash sitting on the sidelines. Not to mention the fact that the way that they chose to go about trying to, you know, keep this ship afloat and keep the party going as long as possible has resulted in the largest redistribution of wealth in human history. Okay. The redistribution of wealth has essentially taken everyone from the middle class down and has made them paycheck to paycheck workers. Okay. Struggling to be able to make up the stagger with higher prices that the Fed intentionally created. Right. And they're staggering, they're staggering to try and, or they're working really hard to make up that stagger or just keep their heads above water. Meanwhile, they're not really like dumping money into their retirement. They see the stock market going up. Okay. But there's not a lot of people right now that are just shoving money into investments. They're just putting a little bit away at every single month. And then everything else is going towards paying food and rent and gasoline and things like that as prices stay high. Okay. The Federal Reserve essentially has facilitated all of those individuals either stagnating or their standard of living getting worse. Meanwhile, the wealth and the standard of living of the wealthy is exploding because of this dynamic. Now, I wrote a piece earlier today. And if you're not subbed, go sub anarchistinvestor.substack.com. Free subs get a shot at some silver, which, by the way, is one of the answers to this scenario. But I wrote about it today. I think there's a lot of people that are desperate right now, and they're grasping for lifeboats. And one of those lifeboats is crypto. And this makes it very dangerous. And again, you have to understand, I'm not Peter Schiff. I don't think crypto is valueless. Okay. Actually, Schiff sees some value too, but you know, he makes his popular wins with having outlandish opinions, right? Crypto and blockchain technology have a place and will have a place into the future. My concern is right now that there's a lot of people that are hanging their hopes on things like Bitcoin. There's a lot of average people that are hanging their hopes on something like Nvidia and the AI craze. And what they don't understand is that they've been pushed so far out on the risk spectrum that, you know, and they've been told that it's a sure thing, right? They've been told this is the future. This is what it's going to look like. We're revolutionizing things. You know, it's going to infinity. Okay. The risk reward ratio is completely out of balance. They think it's a sure thing, that there's no downside and it's all upside. Okay. And they're being forced in that direction because they see what's happening around them. They see the degradation of people's living standards, all right? Now, here's the other unfortunate consequence. I think the drop in living standards is actually necessary to try and survive this, okay? And the reason why I'm saying that is because this entire scenario has essentially stolen cash assets from the middle class and the poor at the very time when cash assets could actually be of value if we actually end up getting depreciation. And so most folks right now are struggling to try and maintain their standard of living They don't want to give up their creature comforts. They'll give up some of the extraneous ones, but really what they're doing is they're kind of cutting where they can, but they're trying to keep some of those things that are, you know, nice and happy, and, you know, the vacation fund and the, you know, not having to cut too much in the Christmas spending arena, right? Like, they want to keep at least some of their streaming platforms and stuff like that to be able to watch their favorite shows and stuff. All of this is, you know, just people trying to hold on to what they had, right? And they're just trying to hold on long enough. It's essentially what corporations are doing, except they're not just holding on to, like, survive. They're holding on, but they're also, some of them are thriving in this environment because they're really good at extracting money from people's wallet, okay? And they're just building their cash hoards because they know what's coming, or they know what they're actually going through right now, and they know what could happen, right? Like I said, we're on the precipice. The question is, does something push us off the edge? What a lot of normies don't understand is that the vast majority of the Western world is in a recession right now. Okay. You know, countries like Germany and Japan and France, you know, a lot of these countries, actually, France might be doing better than the majority of Europe, but a lot of these countries that we think are doing all right are actually in deep, you know, deep recession territory. Okay. And interestingly enough, what's keeping them afloat is the same thing that's keeping companies in the United States afloat. Their central banks borrowed, or their legislatures borrowed, and their central banks printed, and they pre-primed these companies with cash to try and make up the stagger. The only difference is the United States suffers less of that consequence because we have the world reserve currency, so that when we print, we export some of that pain. They have to internalize all of it when they print euros, or when they print yen, or, I mean, if you see the problems that Japan's going through right now, and again, these are generational issues that were never tackled, but you're seeing what the world could look like in the United States if this continues. Okay. Now, I don't mean to be a downer on a Friday. I want to give you some, like, takeaway so that you can look at this, and to try and redeem myself with the libertarians and the anarchists and the, you know, hard money enthusiasts and things like that, that want to say that money printing causes inflation. It does. But the money has to actually make it into circulation. Right now, it's not. The Federal Reserve wants to try and lessen the pressure economically without unleashing that deluge of cash. And we're going to find out within the next 6 to 12 months whether or not that's even possible. Can they manage expectations for long enough so that then all of a sudden some of these companies can get even more footing and they can redo some more restructuring? Not to mention the fact that the Federal Reserve continues to try and sell assets off of its balance sheet through quantitative tightening. And actually recently, their balance sheet started to tick back up again. So I don't know if that process has ended yet, but theoretically, they want to continue to try and sell those assets off of their balance sheet. And right now you see a ton of cash being locked up in those assets that they're selling off of their balance sheet. But if they start cutting interest rates, those investments immediately kind of have the opposite effect, and they can't any longer sell assets off of their balance sheet. They're going to end up having the opposite effect with the economy. So they're stuck, and they're hoping that this plays out the way that they drew it up. And a lot of people are saying, oh, well, they're inept, or they're stupid, or they don't know what they're doing. They know exactly what they're doing. The question is whether or not it ends up being a good thing, right? The worst thing that you can do is assume that someone in a position of power is ignorant. Okay. The vast majority of the time, they're conscious of what they're doing. They might be wrong, but it doesn't mean that they're stupid. Okay. And so this experiment's playing out. So now what can you do? All right. There's a reason why things like commodities are going higher. It's because it's entirely possible that whether the Fed just continues to saber rattle, or they actually cut interest rates, what's going to happen? Inflation. We're going to have another round of inflation, okay, if they actually cut interest rates. So that round of inflation is going to make things more valuable. It's part of the reason why people are grasping to Bitcoin so vehemently, okay? And I'm not one of these people who thinks Bitcoin's going to go to zero immediately, okay? It can take a really long time to play out. I think the Bitcoin bubble can get a lot bigger. I think we could see play out within the next 12 to 18 months. You could see Bitcoin hit 100 or 150,000 per coin, but also eventually the pressures to sell and raise cash to pay for the expenses of life will also bring a dose of reality to the pricing of Bitcoin. And so we'll see how that actually plays out. But things like silver and commodities are going to do well. Okay. Getting out of variable rate debt before was a good idea. And I'm not saying take on debt now. I'm saying don't take on any additional debt. Okay. You have to raise some cash and have a security fund. You also have to look at your spending patterns every single month and be like, look, what's a luxury that I can get rid of? Because you're going to have to raise some cash, but you're not going to have to raise some cash to keep it in dollars. You're going to have to raise some cash to put it in things like silver, okay? You're going to have to put it in things like, believe it or not, there's going to be a dip in real estate, but that's going to be a buying opportunity, okay? And I'm going to talk more about that in the future. But real estate's going to look really good in probably 5 to 10 years, but it's going to look really bad for about 2-3 years, all right? Right now, we still have a hot real estate market. You'll see it heat back up again if the Fed has to cut rates. Because as soon as those rates get cut, the prices have come down a little bit. And that means that monthly payment looks like less of a burden. And people are going to jump on buying homes. Okay. And that's also a supply constraint issue. We don't have a huge supply of homes that are on the market. And there's a huge amount of demand that's pent up. And so you could see that go to the moon. But for the next 12 months, I don't know, maybe not. But I could be wrong. In the long term, though, real estate, hard assets, things that actually have a value, like a physical value, are really important. It's a huge gamble to put all of those eggs in the Bitcoin basket, because does that actually have a physical value, right? I mean, theoretically, by definition, no, because it's a digital asset. It's not a physical one. But as I've made the point in prior ponderings and writings, the value of any cryptocurrency that's based on top of a blockchain is the data that's in the blockchain, all right? Definitely check out that article I wrote earlier today, because it's a little bit of a doomer article, but at the same time, there's also a ray of hope in there, okay? After the dot-com bubble burst, there were companies that came back and ended up being, you know, some of the largest companies today, some of the largest businesses and business models today. But they had to go through the pain with everyone else in that sector after the bubble burst, right? So that's something to keep in mind. There's no panacea here. Like, there's no one thing that's going to fix everything. In the commodities front, and one last thing I'll leave you with before I sign off for the week, is uranium. Uranium has been coming in today. It has a slight uptick in terms of the price. I don't think that necessarily means that it's reached a bottom and it'll continue to go up. But uranium is going to be one of those commodities that I believe will stand the test of time. And so you can put money to work. Again, you don't buy everything at once. You take a piece, take a piece, take a piece. Because over time, I think uranium is going to be one of the most valuable energy-related commodities out there and will essentially be the oil of the future, especially if the powers that be continue to try and push us in this direction of like electrifying everything, right? And just as note, what I've been looking at in terms of playing uranium is the URA ETF. Okay. So something to watch. Again, I'm not a financial professional. You ultimately can make the decision for yourself what you think is the best purchase or not purchase and where to stick your money. I mean, hell, you could stick it in your mattress for all I care. I would say I don't do that because inflation is coming. Real inflation is coming. But that being said, you can ultimately make the decisions you want. I'm just some guy with an opinion on the internet. But if you do like this content and you've gotten something out of it, I appreciate you. I appreciate your support. And like I said, help me out with the algo. And with that, it's Friday. Happy Friday. Have some fun. Have some fun with your family or friends or whatever you do on the weekend. And I will see you back here live Monday at noon Eastern for the Anarchist Investor Live. Appreciate you. Have a great weekend. Peace.